All righty, we're going to get started. We have a quorum. We're ready to rock and roll. We've asked for the air conditioning to be turned off in here. So if you're cold, I'm cold. So we just asked facilities to turn her down. Yeah, exactly. We could hang meat in here, Senator. All right. For the record, we will note the following board members here are in attendance: Abby Osborne, Jerry Stevenson, Jeff Moss, and Jonathan Friedman. And Ryan Starks possibly will be here. And then obviously we have Bill and Victoria as well. Joel will not be here. He is sends his regards from the Christmas stroll in France. Our meeting agenda has been widely distributed, posted online. We're going to talk about our regular port business today. The Northwest Quadrant will be a big part of our agenda. Air cargo in the state, we'll discuss that at length here. We have amendments on the Mineral Mountain and the Central Utah Egger Park project areas and the Castle County project areas. Our agenda today, we'll have public comment at about 3 o'clock, a little bit after. And Diana, are you around? Diana, can you count us off for a cheerleading competition that I saw you at on Saturday? I did. You were there? I was there. 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay. I know Diana's side gig now as a cheerleading competition judge. So again, as with all of our public comment, we'll have 2 minutes for everyone. And if we don't get to you, you can always go to inlandportauthority.utah.gov. All right, board members, we have minutes that we need to approve from the 4th and the 21st of November. If I can get a motion and a second, let me turn you all on.
I'll move to approve the minutes from the last board meeting.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Second.
Jeff will second that. Great, thank you. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All right, that's... passes unanimously. All right, Steve, you're like ready to go. We're going to talk a little bit about the regional project development area and some activity in the Northwest Quadrant. So all you're in the middle. I'll turn you on. Thank you.
Fantastic. All right. Sounds like we're good to go. I am going to get us started with just a little video that our wonderful marketing team put together. If I could find it.
It's on. Will you pull it a little bit closer to you, Stephen?
Absolutely. This seems to be like stuck to the table. So I'm going to just lead forward as far as I can go.
Stephen, before you start, yes, Ben would like to.
If I may. Thank you, Stephen. So we're going to forego the typical executive director's report for this meeting. The reason we're doing that, and the reason we've recommended to our board, we start with Stephen. We want to set a high-level vision for first what's happening in the Northwest Quadrant. We have a lot going on. One of our concerns, and you'll hear this repeatedly, is that if we don't be proactive, if we don't have the right structure, we're not going to be able to optimize a lot of the opportunities that are in front of us. Every time I talk with Victoria, she reminds me we need to do truck parking. And so we don't forget that. It's just we've got so much going on, it's hard to get to everything. So we want to be able to develop the right structure for all of the topics that we're going to talk about today. This includes things like support for the landfill, support for air cargo, support for a number of different dynamics. So part of what we'll be talking about again is just how do we best optimize the opportunities, particularly in the Northwest Quadrant that are in front of us. So Stephen, if that sets the stage, okay.
It absolutely does. And I really do appreciate the opportunity to share with the board, you know, what has been happening and all the wonderful things that we have going on in the Northwest Quadrant. Okay, here we go. But this little video to tee us up. Hopefully the sound comes through.
Well, as a supplier, you want to be as close as possible to your best customer, which we would love to be. The second thing is the same reasons why we located here. It's really a central place. You get a great access to a very diverse workforce, and it's logistically really a great spot as well. So if you're exporting out of Utah,
it's
to the West, and that is allowing you to be very effectively out of Salt Lake. Beyond that, Utah is a great place to live and do business in, not just the Northwest Quadrant, but really Salt Lake is a wonderful place to locate and build your own company culture.
So thanks for indulging me with that. If you don't know Martin Ritter, who is the CEO of Stadler for the U.S. operations, he really had some very nice things to say about the Northwest Quadrant. And we want to find opportunities to really expand that perspective beyond just Stadler and finding opportunities throughout the Northwest Quadrant. And excuse me, Zoom is really being very particular with me today. So one moment, please, while I share this. Okay, here we go. Pardon me. So let's just get, we'll kick off while I'm working on the technical aspects here behind the scenes. But in the Northwest Quadrant, we have really a significant amount of activity happening today. We wanted to take the board through really the key activities that we're looking to drive optimization in the Northwest Quadrant. On this slide, you'll see really kind of a layout of all of the opportunities and all the things that are happening today behind the scenes. Most of these are very active. Some of them are on the horizon. And each of these really should resonate with the board, with members of our board as priorities. I don't expect those all to be the same thing. And we'll go through that. Some of you go, yep, that's what I want us spending all of our time on. And another, we'll go to another slide, and I think other board members will say the same thing. There is a lot happening today, and we wanted to take you through that. So in terms of kind of our first area that we wanted to focus on is business development. And we categorize this into three areas, and that would be new business recruitment, existing business growth and expansion, and Northwest Quadrant marketing. When we talk about recruitment, that's things like responding to RFIs that come from EDC Utah or GOEO, participating in site selector or company visits, working with EDC Utah or others on outreach missions. We've done some of those this year. And then ultimately working with companies to locate into the Northwest Quadrant. There is a lot of time and effort spent on that. We've submitted over 30 RFI responses this year in the Northwest Quadrant. We participated in multiple site visits. Hopefully some of those will be opportunities for us to talk about in future meetings. We also spend a lot of time on business, existing business, so business growth and expansion, meeting with existing companies in and around the Northwest Quadrant in our critical industries of focus. That would be companies like Stadler, BD Medical, BioMariU, all of whom we've met recently and had good conversations with. We actually have two companies that are looking at expansion opportunities in the Northwest Quadrant that we'll be talking about shortly, and another one on the horizon. And these are really good, solid opportunities for job and expansion in the Northwest Quadrant. And then lastly, I can't express this enough because it seems to happen a lot behind the scenes, but our marketing team works very hard in gathering interviews such as that, creating branding, which you see in this presentation, and making sure that we are creating materials to drive awareness of the Northwest Quadrant and everything that we have to offer and the value proposition therein. Working with EDC Utah, GOEO, our broker partners, we look to get that message out. We're also embarking on an industry-specific campaign, which we're going to talk about here in a little bit, that's really a proactive approach to driving industry growth in our project area. Stakeholder engagement is a huge part of the time that we have. So we work very closely with our landowners and our developers to understand what their plans are, how they're growing, share what we're working on, make sure that we're working towards the same ends. We also spent the last year working very closely with Salt Lake City on an interlocal agreement amendment, which I'm glad to say we were able to move forward with. And that in turn has spawned another activity, which is coming up, and that's the baseline and preferred scenario project. I also work a lot with Salt Lake City's Economic Development Department, and we have gotten very tight. We work closely on all of those responses and business recruitment and really drive that alignment. And I'm really proud of the partnership that we've developed with those guys. So it's really, you know, an opportunity for us to make sure that we're growing this together and that we are still continuing that community first approach to our growth and optimization of the project area. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on logistics because Sebastian Abril will be talking a lot and following me about air cargo. I do want to say one thing as it pertains to optimization and especially business development. We strongly believe that the investments and efforts around air cargo and logistics that we are bringing to the Northwest Quadrant will pay dividends in terms of helping to set the stage for the right business coming in. And those critical businesses like life sciences, biomedical manufacturing, clean energy, you name it, having the right logistics in place is really going to be a game changer for us and a significant value add to what we provide here. Rail expansion is something that we always talk about and think about and work on. As this board knows, we worked on an expansion south of I-80 from Stadler, this test track now connecting to Holcim, which was a huge win. We are looking at opportunities north of I-80. A lot of that is tied to the outcome of what happens with the North Temple landfill. But once we've determined that and we can move forward, we'll see rail become a very significant talking point and focus of effort for us in the Northwest Quadrant. Lastly, I don't want to step away from this without talking about semi-truck parking. This continues to be a significant challenge in the state, in the region, in the nation, and it's not going away. We are still trying to find good opportunities for that. That's finding the right land, the right partnership, and continuing to drive to find some solutions to that endeavor. And that problem is just going to continue to be something that we need to focus on in this project area. Sustainability. This slide does not do justice to what's happening in terms of sustainability in the Northwest Quadrant. It really doesn't lay out the true picture of the amount of effort that is happening today. As we all know, our wonderful Mona Smith does a lot of effort, not only in the project areas throughout the state. She spends a lot of time working on the Northwest Quadrant. We have a really revolutionary grant with the EPA Clean Ports and DAQ partnership that's coming up. That will be, enormous amount of effort, but that payoff is going to be huge. We have worked through a lot of sustainability action study recommendations. Mona and I have had conversations with numerous stakeholders and looking for opportunities for partnership and where we can be a value add in things like driving emissions reductions, helping identify and address transit issues in the Northwest Quadrant so that we can work on mass transit. And then the last thing is, of course, this board knows that we approved a significant amount of dollars to go to the Great Salt Lake Shoreline Preservation. And I would expect that we're going to see more of that as the years go on. So, again, wanted to highlight those activities in the Northwest Quadrant around sustainability and really do appreciate everything that Mona brings to the table, too, and her partnership with us on that. And then my friends over in that do contracts and finance. Unsung heroes, thank you for everything. And when I think of the tip of the iceberg that we talk about in the other slides, this is what's underneath the water, is all of the negotiating of incentive contracts, sublease proposals, which has been just such a fun thing for us to do, TIF and bond funding and identifying how to spend those and what's the right way to do that. It's a huge amount of time and effort. And so we want to make sure we call out, that amount of effort in the Northwest Quadrant as well. It's significant. I'm going to take a minute to pause there before we kind of move forward. We ran through a whole bunch of stuff, and I'm sorry to laundry list it, but I really am excited for all the things we have going. It's Christmas, and I thought about this the other day. I told Ben, I feel like sometimes the kid at Christmas that gets all the presents under the tree, and I don't know which toy to play with. Like, there's so many things that we've got that are cool going on in the Northwest Quadrant that we really, need to spend more time, effort, and attention to drive forward. But it's going in good places, and we're excited to share more with this board as we go forward. I'm going to pause for questions, and then I'm going to deep dive into one of the topics here. Okay.
I don't see any.
Okay, thank you. With that, I want to talk a little bit about the Life Sciences and BioHub initiative that we're embarking on. This is not, we're not coming to you today fully having fully baked the pie here. We're still in the middle of working through identifying what the right ingredients are for that. But we're very excited about this. Up to this point, our business development and recruitment function has largely been reactive. We react to requests that come in. We react to opportunities that come. We also want to be very proactive in our approach in building in the right industry in Northwest Quadrant. We've got several opportunities, but we're really looking to start with life sciences and biomedical manufacturing. We believe that in Utah and the Northwest Quadrant, we really have the opportunity to capitalize on the existing momentum that's already been built in this space. We're already recognized as an up-and-comer in the market in life sciences. But as we always want to do, we want to punch above our weight here. And we think that the Northwest Quadrant complements other areas of the state that are doing this, areas like The Point, which we think is great for R&D and that kind of aspect. We think the manufacturing needs to come to the Northwest Quadrant. So with that, we feel like the tools that we have through Inland Port, through our project area approach, we are really going to provide the right opportunity to place make for this industry. And that's going to be ultimately to the benefit of our workforce and our economy. So just a little bit overview of the strategy, and we're kind of on step one here, and that's really creating this task force. We're not experts in this, but there are experts in the state that we're bringing to the table to help us work through this. As we go forward, we'll get into sector analysis. We'll be working with the businesses that are here today to really understand the opportunities and where we can invest. And then we go into targeted marketing and start working to do really solid outreach to these companies and a very significant push. Then, you know, as we expand our partnerships, we work to ultimately make places for these companies to land in the Northwest Quadrant. We're very excited about this. We're also excited about our partners that we have here today. Some of you already in this room, thank you. Thank you, Representative Moss, for your and others for your participation in our emerging task force as we move forward on this. It really is a coalition that we built together. Salt Lake City, we had a chance to take the economic development team through this last week. They're very excited about this. And really, I think we have a lot of people on board with it. And then lastly, I'll just touch on the expected outcomes. And I'm going to summarize that in that we feel like this is ultimately to the benefit of our economy and to our community. These are good jobs. These are advanced manufacturing opportunities that bring good wages and really the right kind of lifestyle and opportunities to the Northwest Quadrant community and really fit well into the whole Utah ecosystem. So more to come on this. This is just an introductory presentation to the board about what we're doing here. We're excited to give you updates in further board meetings. With that, Director Hart, do you have anything you'd like to add?
Yes, and would invite any comments from any of the board members who'd like to. But for us, this is really becoming a challenge, and it's a really good challenge. We've got all of these things. There are several of those things that Stephen mentioned that are FTEs just in and of themselves. If we as an organization don't capitalize on those opportunities, we're going to miss out on some things that could really differentiate the Northwest Quadrant. And, you know, Victoria, we talk about this one a lot, or board member Petro, we talk about this a lot, but truck parking is just one of those dynamics. A lot of days, and Stephen and I talk about his schedule, the things he's going, he's never going to be able to drive something like that. As we think about this BioHub opportunity doing business outreach, as we think about somebody potentially that may be needed as a liaison to the landfill site, as we think about any number of these different things in public financing, tax differential optimization, business incentive negotiation, you go on down the list. These are things in and of themselves, each one of these, that could absolutely remake the Northwest Quadrant and really help the Northwest Quadrant. And, you know, one person we have now is Stephen, who's doing an amazing job. but he only slices so many ways. And so at some point, that's something that we want to take a really hard look at, is how do we capitalize on these opportunities? Because we feel like we have a lot of really cool opportunities in front of us.
Representative Moss has a few questions, Stephen.
Yes, sir.
Actually, just a comment. I just appreciate what your this presentation. You know, I had the opportunity to meet with a number of life science folks in the Bay Area and Boston, and whenever I mentioned the inland port and the proximity to air and, you know, rail and all of that, right, so close by in almost an untouched area, people are blown away that this is even an option. And so I just, it's like this unknown thing right now, as you know, is we're trying to get this out there, but I know that there's such an interest and desire to see this. And so I just appreciate that. And I love the fact that you're doing such a great partnership with The Point, because I do see those as very complementary. And instead of having two different groups, you know, independently trying to go after some of the same people to try to engage with, this collaboration, I think, is really going to be helpful. So thank you.
Absolutely. We've got a cool, Utah package to bring to the table here with us, and we need to get the word out. Absolutely. Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it.
Sebastian, it looks like you're online and going to give us an air cargo update. So we'll turn the time over to you.
Thank you, everyone, for accommodating, and just give me a moment to get the presentation going. Please let me know when you can see my screen.
It's coming up now. There we go.
Awesome. Okay, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you, Stephen, for the awesome layup into air cargo. I want to couple what he mentioned about recruitment of manufacturing with a little bit of data. So, you know, logistics is the backbone of manufacturing decisions. And we know this from research that Deloitte has highlighted, that over 70% of advanced manufacturing consider logistics efficiency a key factor in their site selection. Utah's emerging air cargo capabilities, paired within its 18-hour reach to 80 million people, uniquely qualifies us as a state as a competitive choice for industries like semiconductors, nutraceuticals, pharma, biotech. We see that interest, and we're building on it. Before I move over to the next slide that makes the case for why air cargo, I just want to give a quick shout out to and kudos to the Salt Lake International Airport. They've been incredibly accommodating for me. I mean, everything short of moving my desk into one of their offices, we are working hand in hand, and I think we're making the case for where air cargo and why air cargo is pivotal to where we're going forward. So ultimately, we want to be an air cargo gateway. And the case to make that is to identify what's happening in our market. Now, currently we have high air cargo leakage. Approximately 94% of Utah's qualifying air cargo is transported out of the states. It shows a substantial loss for potential direct air cargo. And what that means is, as we want manufacturing, but we want to also utilize the state-of-the-art facility that is the international airport. We have an underutilization of existing capacity. We know that only 6% of the available belly space is departing on passenger flights from Salt Lake City International. And this shows that we have inefficiencies in the system that we need to address. Part of the bio and pharma space is recognizing that we have insufficient temperature controlled facilities. It's not to say that we don't have them, but if we want to go the next step and really and really start entertaining the vast majority of this cargo space, we need to address the lack of adequate temperature controlled infrastructures. This hampers our ability to handle sensitive cargo, particularly affecting industries like life sciences, medical equipment that require those conditions. Dependence on trucking to outer state airports, this is a big one. You know, when you look at air cargo, we're tackling two points. We have one, as Utah, we have one of the most robust road networks in the West Coast, 80 million people within 18 hours. So to address that, we need to highlight a significant portion of the air cargo goes out of state. And the question is with proper investment and addressing these, can we make a pivot to bring so that LA LAX starts looking at Salt Lake International as, you know what, next time we hit congestion, we're going to send it to Salt Lake International. When Chicago is running into their high season, they're going to know that they can send their freight into Salt Lake International. And we see that as a very real possibility from what we're hearing on the ground. I'd like to take a moment to pause before I go on to the next slide. Does anyone have any questions on the current state of air cargo in our market?
We do have one question, Jonathan.
Sebastian.
Nope, I've got the wrong one. I'm sorry.
Sebastian, thanks so much for to this point your report. I do have a couple of questions. I mean, the leakage out of Utah makes no sense to me, and so I'm so glad that the port is addressing this. I am curious about the 6% of the underutilization of the passenger car planes, yeah. The belly of the passenger planes. Can you tell me, is that pure inefficiency, or is it because of like the outside temperature limits, the weight sure. requirements in passenger aircrafts?
And as always, Jonathan, you seem to have foresight into whatever my next slide is going to be. But yes, all of the above. So, the 6%, if we look at the equipment that's, departing out of, when I say equipment, I mean aircraft that's departing out of the airport now, most of it is what's called narrow body. So this is for loose cargo, small freight. There's smaller aircraft in general. And a lot of that underutilization is the manufacturers and the freight forwarders of our community. The real cost advantage comes when you're able to move the big stuff, pallets. And for that, you need wide-body aircraft, or in some cases, you need freighters altogether. You have, it's chicken or the egg scenario, right? And the nice part is that we already have all the eggs. We have the manufacturing. We have an incredible amount of manufacturers here in a lot of sectors. What we need is the equipment. And this is where the beautiful partnership is discussions that we're having with the airport is coming to fruition. I've been able to articulate what we see from a freight perspective, and the airport's been able to give feedback on how we could potentially, attract some of the air carriers from a larger aircraft perspective. And if we can get a couple wide bodies into select markets, like, for example, the Incheon flight coming up in June of 2025, that's a major step forward, because that takes all of the potential freight from a lot of manufacturers and forwarders that enter the Asia Pacific, and suddenly they have an in and out import and export lane with a wide body aircraft.
Thanks.
Does that answer? Yeah, no problem. Any other questions?
Thank you. Yep.
And these are the what moves the needle for the state. So you've heard this before. We have infrastructure, capacity, and goods. We already have on the infrastructure side a state-of-the-art international airport. What we need is more amped up temperature controlled facilities, ideally third party screening and security. What this enables us to do is open the space up to more aircraft carriers to enter the cargo market and have the ability to screen and go through the security go through the security processes that it takes to load air cargo. We need equipment. We need more equipment. This is something akin to the investment that we're working with in tandem with the airport to provide new equipment to support the Incheon flight. That's a good example. When we look at the capacity side, right, capacity is the primary driver of efficient service operations, and what that means, going back to Jonathan's question, if we have larger aircraft, wide body 777s, this gets us closer to moving the large stuff, the main deck. It introduces competition into the market. Suddenly we start priming the market for operational resilience, meaning we don't want to introduce solutions into the market that go away as soon as you know, something changes. We want the market to be able to bring pallets and to bring these wide body aircraft into the space, but also the ability for the market to support that over the course of 10, 20, 30, 50 years. We don't want to have situations where we have these small spurts of really good progress and then we regress back to old ways. So it's good to keep, bring capacity into there, but we also want to make sure that we're creating operational resilience by priming the market to understand that, it's not just our manufacturing and our tonnage movers that are supporting the market. It's also outside ports potentially like Los Angeles, Houston, Denver, Phoenix, Chicago that would be pumping freight into our market and utilizing the airport even further. The last pillar that we adhere to is goods. This creating jobs, it strengthens Utah's community. To Stephen's point, manufacturers, when they're creating these goods, they look at the logistics and they look at the logistics need and how that, the community can serve that need. Is it road? Is it air? And when you're talking about, temperature sensitive, equipment like pharmaceuticals, you absolutely need a robust air cargo solution. Utah has a lot of manufacturers. We're connected with the defense industry. We have all of the top 10 tonnage movers from a freight forwarding perspective. What we need is pharma, DG, and most importantly, outreach. Manufacturers, forwarders need to understand the tools that we're bringing into the market. And so much of this is, Director Hart hears this all the time. I say that we have five step ones, moving at any given time, but all of them are important to start moving the needle forward. We need to connect with the local manufacturers so that they understand in the next 18 months, real viable solutions are, in this case, as early as 2025, we had the international airport is going to be supporting a new entry point into the Asia Pacific through the Incheon flight with Delta. So I'd like to stop there. That's what we have for the air cargo update presentation, and I open it to any questions before I yield my time.
Sebastian, thank you. Ben's got a comment. Let's turn you on.
Sebastian, just quickly, thank you. Very well done. Good overview. Just from my standpoint in the executive director and our staff, the reason we're continuing to go through this, just to remind the public, we started into this more holistic kind of fresh look at logistics across the state over the last 2.5 years as the board has challenged us to kind of take a closer look at everything. We've had a great study now that's been completed. We have a statewide logistics strategy that's been adopted. One of the things that it continues to point to is air cargo. Let me just mention a couple things on this. First and foremost, we will, when it comes to our key partner in this, there's some other things that are afoot and other opportunities, particularly in things like air taxis and things like that. And we would say cargo delivery, autonomous cargo delivery and things like that. There's things out there, but really a critical partner in all of this is Salt Lake City International Airport. We're not ever going to get ahead of the airport. We're always going to defer to Bill and his team. They are the experts. They really know what's going on. Sebastian is a logistics guru. He knows much more than I do. And so he's done a great job helping to educate us. But the reason we've been going through this process the way that we have is because when we get into Q1 and Q2 of next year, there could be very and likely will be very real opportunities for us to bring back to the board. We've been keeping board members apprised of some of these different opportunities. Sebastian alluded to a couple of them. But we want to be thorough with the public and first talk about the why. The why in my mind has very much been settled. This is an incredible opportunity for the state of Utah. Rail is an important opportunity. We're not dismissing that, but air cargo is something when we look at the entire picture, it really moves the needle that quite frankly, the port was created to help move. And so these are important things. The reason we keep coming back to this, the reason we're going through the processes that we are, quite frankly, is because there will be things we bring back to public board meetings in 2025, most likely, but also probably in the first 6 months or so. When we bring these things back to the board, we don't want anyone to be caught off guard and say, well, why are we doing this? We want to have already gone through that case study, gone through the exercises and made sure that this is something that's really going to help move the needle. So we're not proposing anything today. And we're always going to support the airport. They're the leader in this. but there are some really cool things that we can do to support things we're involved in developing right now that we'll bring back to the board as they become more solid.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks, Sebastian. Oh, yes. What number are you on, Victoria? 9. Nope, not 10. There you go.
Hey, Sebastian, could I ask for another layer of analysis? Clearly not today, but maybe like by email. When we talked about rail, so often we were able to talk about how many trucks were removed from the road, how much of an environmental positive that is. I know when we talk about like the 777s, every time we add an international flight, there's a little lump in our throats going, okay, what does that do to the air quality over on the west side? And so my instinct says, and maybe Bill, you know this because you've been in this world, my instinct says this helps with the incredible amount of trucks we have starting and finishing their destinations here in the Northwest Quadrant. But I'd love to be able to get some information about exactly how much and what that means for an environmental air quality impact.
Absolutely, Victoria. It's something I can work on presenting. And the nice thing is it's widely accessible data. Even just from a basic tonnage calculation, you know, the moment we have larger equipment coming in, essentially what we do is we just reverse the calculus on what that's taking out from the other ports, adjacent ports. So everything that would normally be going to Los Angeles is now departing over here and what that looks like from a CO2 emissions perspective.
Bill, it sounds like you have some.
Yeah, I would just add, I think, an anecdote which ought to be pretty interesting. So Amazon has their own, it's basically a contractor that flies for them, Prime Air. Everybody's seen the Prime trucks on the road. When one of those pulls up to one of their facilities, we don't actually have one in Salt Lake now, it fills about 11 trucks, semi-trucks, 11 of those yeah, big Prime trucks that then go to warehouses where they're unloaded and prepared for distribution. A 777 would probably be, I want to say, 18 over-the-road trucks. A 747, which is actually still in pretty extensive use in international air cargo, even more so. From that perspective, you think about it, those trucks that are arriving here from LA and Long Beach with our iPhones, and I'm just looking around the room. I was thinking about this earlier. This is a room full of air cargo, all the cameras, all the controllers for the LED lights here, all the microphones, all the Apple Watches or whatever it is you happen to have. Anything that is small and high value probably is air cargo at one point or another in its life. And today, all of this stuff, really, anything that's manufactured overseas, for example, arrives in Los Angeles, gets on a truck, and comes here. Now, if that arrived directly by plane, there would be a single corridor into Salt Lake International. It would land. It would be deplaned, devanned, and it would take off. If it arrives here by truck, first of all, it takes the entire interstate network into Salt Lake, anywhere between 11 and 18 of them per plane. And so those emissions occur over that entire length. And I think it's a really important question and one that we probably should spend some real time on because there's a much deeper dive to be done here. And it's not that air cargo is has – you know, no carbon footprint. It has a considerable carbon footprint, but you need to do a really serious comparison to appreciate the advantages that can be available. And I think we're all trying to do the same thing. The equipment that was referenced by Sebastian, it's called a top deck loader so that you can actually get the cargo up to the upper deck of a wide body aircraft. It'll be electric. You know, historically they've all been, ICE engine driven. All of that ground service equipment at Salt Lake International is now electric. So we've eliminated those emissions, and we're very committed to doing as much of that as the market allows. So it's a really good question. It's an important one. And my guess is most people don't really understand all of the dimensions of measuring the advantages and disadvantages of something like air cargo.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it. Sebastian, appreciate your presentation.
Absolutely.
Keep up the good work.
I do.
Amy, it looks like you and Mona have 6 board policies for us to review. Tell me your number that you're on. You're 18. Very good. Mona, you come up maybe the middle one there. Turn you both on. Thanks, Amy.
Thank you. We have just some updates on the board policy reviews that we did, and I'll just highlight any changes since the last month's presentation. So we will be bringing board policy review, which is BPO6. No changes since last we discussed. In fact, we haven't made any changes to this. We feel like it's well in motion. BPO7, which is the procurement policy, it is up for its annual review. We've just made some minor corrections on this as state finance has changed some of the numbering on their administrative rules. We just wanted to correct that to align. With the whistleblower BPO8 policy, no changes since we last presented it last month. Just to highlight, we did have our legal review of that, and so those changes are made in the revisions. Since we presented last month on BPO9, the internal control program policy, we made one minor change around this, which is to allow for quarterly controls to be reviewed, as some of these things, especially around financial controls, have a quarterly action. It just makes sense to have them reviewed and trigger that action. Also, with BP11 personnel, we're bringing this up with no changes, but knowing next month we will come with changes. It's a little bit earlier for this one, but as we have been rolling outside of state systems, specific with payroll and other things, there's a lot of changes that we need to make. So we will plan on bringing some changes next month. I will now like to turn the time over to Mona to discuss BP17 wetlands to just do some clarifications based on some misperceptions. And so, Mona.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, board members, for the opportunity to summarize some of the updates we've made to our wetlands policy since we took a look at it last month. We have updated how the term wetlands is defined in our policy. And we've also updated how we're defining wetlands for the purpose of our wetland mitigation and UIPA project areas section. Although the current definition for wetlands in the policy is consistent with how the EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers define wetlands, considering the unique not wet playas that characterize a large amount of crucial wetlands around the Great Salt Lake, to go a step further and alleviate any misunderstanding or misconception, I consulted with the National Audubon Society Saline Lakes Program Director, as well as wetland experts at the Utah Geological Survey, to enhance the current language we have defining wetlands in our policy. Based on their recommendation, I've enhanced our definition of a wetland in the wetland mitigation and UIPA project areas section of our wetlands policy to the following. Wetlands are areas that are inundated or saturated by surface or groundwater at a frequency and duration sufficient to support, and that under normal circumstances do support, a prevalence of vegetation typically adapted for life in saturated soil conditions, or in the cases of playas, hydrologic soil indicators such as cracked soil and salt crust. In the Intermountain West, wetlands typically consist of fresh and saltwater marsh, wet meadows, playas, and mudflats. I'd like to clarify, Army Corps jurisdictional wetlands may not be wet year-round. In EPA guidance on how wetlands are defined and identified under the Clean Water Act Section 404, which governs Army Corps jurisdictional wetlands, the EPA shares that wetlands are areas where the frequent and prolonged presence of water at or near the soil surface drives the natural system, meaning the kind of soils that form, the plants that grow, and the fish and or wildlife communities that use the habitat. Swamps, marshes, and bogs are well-recognized types of wetlands. However, many important specific wetland types have drier or more variable water systems than those familiar to the general public. Some examples of these are vernal pools, pools that form in the spring rains but are dry at other times of the years, playas, areas at the bottom of undrained desert basins that are sometimes covered with water, and prairie potholes, which we don't really experience or worry about much out here. Again, this is consistent with how we are defining wetlands for the purpose of our wetlands policy, and is further clarified by the enhanced definition that we are presenting to the board today for approval. In addition to updating how wetlands are defined within the policy, we've made some additional updates to three sections as follows. We've removed the Utah Department of Environmental Quality Wetlands Program section. This wetlands program was funded by a wetland program development grant and ended in 2021. Because the program was ended, there are no designated beneficial uses specific to wetlands. Instead, uses are assigned based on ownership and proximity to the Great Salt Lake. Results from this wetlands program are summarized in the project summary for wetland program development grant, which is linked in our policy. Additionally, the division of water quality shares results from impounded and fringe wetlands monitoring and assessment projects around the Great Salt Lake in their final report for the wetland program development grant, which we've also linked in our policy. We added a section for Utah standards of quality for waters of the state, which is using language that was already originally in the policy. We've just assigned it its own title. And then we've also added a section for Utah Division of Water Quality Wetland Program Development, which summarizes the information I just shared around those wetland program development grants. Lastly, we revised language in the wetland mitigation and UIPA project areas section to reflect that wetland mitigation monies must be spent on eligible activities beyond what is required by federal and state regulations. And lastly, we've updated wetland mitigation project prioritization criteria to prioritize wetland mitigation projects located adjacent to or within 600 feet of wildlife and or waterfowl management areas, as well as wetland mitigation projects that create natural and ecologically meaningful buffer zones between wetland complexes and development areas. I know that was a lot of scientific and legal jargon I just threw at you, so I'm happy to answer any questions you may have at this time.
Thanks, Mona. Appreciate it. Board members, this is all in your packet, too. You can reference all of this, but appreciate you looking at this, Amy. Thank you for the update. And I think the next item on the agenda is for you as well to adopt Ariane as our treasurer.
Yes, based on the transition of Ben Byes going to UFair, we've hired Ariane Gibson, and that leaves a treasurer role, which we have had the board appoint through a resolution. So we just have resolution that we will be asking the board to take action on resolution 2024, appointing her as the treasurer of UIPA.
Great. Thank you. Ariane, let's turn some time over to you to give us the next resolution on the continued Social Security participation. Wow, this is interesting.
Yes, so continuation of our separation from the state of Utah. We're moving out of the payroll system and on our own. And so in order for our employees to continue participating in Social Security, if they choose to do so, I've consulted with the State Division of Finance, and they have provided this resolution for us to bring before the board to vote on and allow us as employees of the Inland Port to participate in Social Security as an organization. So that's kind of the quick answer there.
Couldn't participate in Social Security. So that's very interesting to know. We should have asked Jerry. He's not paying attention.
I'll comment on this issue, and also we didn't spend a whole lot of time on it prior, but the personnel policy issue as well. So Ariane referenced that we are in the process of separating ourselves from the state of Utah. We are in the process of becoming our own organization, which was the intent.
The intent and driven by statute changes that you had to separate, be an independent agency.
So with this item, it's a little bit interesting, but it's one of those dynamics that we have to get right just to make sure that we set up the organization and the continued evolution of the organization happens in the right way. And then I would say on the personnel policy, we didn't cover a whole lot in that. We didn't have a whole lot of changes. We right now are separating from the state financial system and a few other services as well. But as we do that, it's going to impact our personnel policy. So leave hours, how those things are accrued. So just for the public's information, we are presenting personnel as round one this month because we do these in two rounds. We're going to come back to the board with round two in January, which again is part of this process of separating ourselves and becoming our own entity. There may be some significant changes to that item. None of them should be controversial or shocking. It's just we're going to have our own personnel policy that's set up according to what our organization needs, as opposed to what we had previously when we were more connected with the state of Utah. So at our January meeting, we will have probably a personnel policy that does have some changes. It'll reflect our new payroll system and some of the other new systems that we'll be using. But ultimately, that's kind of what's going on. So if there are members of the public or others, board members certainly, that have questions as to why we're doing things the way we are, our chair just said it perfectly. I can't say it any better than she did. It's part of this organization's evolution towards standing on its own more firmly. So
thanks, Ben. Thanks, Ariane. Appreciate it. Danny, I think the time is yours to talk about resolution 20 on the Mineral Mountain project area and 21, the Central Utah Agri-Park project area. You want to go? Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair and board members. Let me get set up here. All right. It's great to be with you again today. Is that better? Great to be with you again today. We're going to review for the second time the proposed amendments for Mineral Mountains and for Central Utah Agri-Park amendments for these two project areas. Just to refresh your memory, the amendment for Mineral Mountains adjusts the project area boundaries, slightly contracting its overall size from approximately 25,435 acres to approximately 25,388 acres. This modification focuses on cleaning up the boundaries, adding properties in key locations, while removing others to better align with community needs and support future development. So this is the Milford zone of the Mineral Mountains project area, which includes the town's industrial park just east of the community, a large area of renewable energy generation and industrial use north and east of Milford, including the Milford Airport. The red areas on this map represent properties that were originally included in the project area boundary, which are also part of previously created redevelopment project areas. These parcels will be removed through this amendment. The areas highlighted in green represent properties primed for geothermal development, which were not originally included in the boundary, and these are those areas which will be added. This image shows the Minersville zone of the project area. The original boundary included a parcel that is also part of a previously designated redevelopment area that needs to be removed from our project area. By fine-tuning the project area, we're better positioned to leverage local resources, create high-wage jobs, and invest in meaningful infrastructure improvements that benefit the community. Today's action is for this item. Is to adopt a resolution to amend the Mineral Mountains Inland Port project area and to adopt an updated project area plan. I'll pause if there are any questions from members of the board about the Mineral Mountains amendment. Moving on, Central Utah Agri-Park is the second item today. This amendment incorporates two new zones, Dog Valley and Ash Grove, into the project area while enhancing the Nortonville zone with additional properties. These updates aim to bolster regional logistics capabilities and strengthen local agriculture and industry. The amendment expands the project area from approximately 35,000 acres to approximately 42,820 acres. This amendment is a vital step in fostering sustainable economic growth across central Utah. By integrating these zones, we're not only building stronger logistics infrastructure, but also opening the door to greater opportunities for local businesses and residents. Looking at these zones, this is just a quick reminder. The Nortonville zone enhancements focus on expanding rail connectivity, a critical component for efficient transportation and trade. Property shown on this map that has a solid green line in the center there was originally included in the project area. This is 27 acres. The properties immediately north and south of this that are delineated with the dotted lines includes 113 acres of industrial zoned land with rail access. These additions focus on expanding rail connectivity and providing other opportunities for investment. And this Dog Valley zone is 2,948 acres located west of Nephi in the next valley over that is positioned for potential renewable energy development, further diversifying the area's economic portfolio. And the Ash Grove zone is property surrounding the current Ash Grove cement facilities located near Lemington, west of Nephi. Inclusion of this property supports potential expansion of this company that has been located here for 40 years, resulting in improved rail infrastructure, new capital investment, and the creation of new high-wage jobs. Additionally, it includes properties that could be attractive to the recruitment of businesses that directly support the Ash Grove plant. Again, the action today is to approve a resolution to amend the Central Utah Agripark and to adopt an updated project area plan. Once again, any questions?
I think Representative Moss wants to be in the naming of these areas in the future. So if you could include him on the port branding. No, these are great names. They all make sense once you explain them, but on their face, I'm like, interesting. Yeah, very cool. Thanks, Danny. Appreciate it. All right, Jenna, it looks like you're up to give us an update on the Castle County project area. Tell us what's going on in Carbon and Emery. Better? Okay. I'm doing the first presentation for an amendment to the Castle Country project area. There are a couple of key opportunities in this area that were not included in the original plan and budget. This amendment will include an industrial park that is adjacent to the San Rafael Energy Research Center. As you know, they are working on research and development of alternative energy sources, and we are looking to include the industrial park adjacent to that so that companies come in and do their own research and then the eventual manufacturing of those additional energy resources that would be in that area. We're also including some area down in Green River City. They're expanding. They've got a new city manager that wanted to expand their project area down there, and we have Project Photosynthesis, which is currently in negotiations for locating in Green River City. They use different types of algae to clean impurities out of the agriculture runoff that's down in the melon fields and the other agriculture processes that are in Green River City. They use the algae to take E. coli and other bacteria out of that water before they put the clean water back into the Green River system. So they're cleaning the different impurities and the different things in the agriculture runoff and also in the sewer lagoons to be able to return that clean water into the Green River and the Colorado Basin water system. They're also going to take some waste from the melon fields and the other agriculture farms down there and turn it into biochar and then give that back to the farmers for at no cost to them
for improving the soil and getting higher yields out of their crops next year. The main goals in this project area are to build out the key infrastructure systems in the region to support some anticipated growth. What we're finding in these rural areas is that there is a lot of economic opportunity down there. These areas just don't have the bandwidth to capitalize on those. So UIPA can come in and support that bandwidth and assist these communities in capturing those opportunities and assist the companies in realizing the benefits of locating in rural areas. The recruitment strategies are not changing with this amendment. We didn't make any changes in the plan and budget to that portion of the plan. But I wanted to highlight that these particular areas are going to focus on the carbon fiber manufacturing and alternate energy resources that we're really going to focus on recruiting into these areas. The first area is projected to bring in about 1,100 jobs and hundreds of millions of dollars in investment. There's several different areas that they're including that are located in Emory County. The second area is the industrial park that's adjacent to the San Rafael Energy Research Center. There's a company that has shortlisted this site. They will provide 75 jobs initially and $75 million in capital expenditures with room to grow in the future. They're going to do micro reactor units manufacturing there, and they would like to be located next to the San Rafael Research Center. We're also expanding the marketable land that's in Green River. This is where Project Photosynthesis is going to be located. They will create up to 25 jobs initially with their first couple of pods they're putting in, and then future expansions are going to require additional staff. This project is almost entirely self-sufficient. They are going to be utilizing solar panels for their electricity needs, and their only waste is clean water and additional energy, and then the biochar that they're going to be putting back into the community. There's not going to be any additional waste that comes out of that. Do you have any questions?
Just one. You know, we are involved in a lot of, I guess there's a lot of rare earth elements in Utah. Mm-hmm. Do any of these projects include the harvesting of any of those?
Not currently. There are a couple of companies and some other operations that are looking at locating in these areas, but we're not in advanced talks with any of them yet.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
No, this is super exciting stuff. It dovetails so nicely with the state energy plan and the governor's, you know, gigawatt mm-hmm. initiative, and good work on seeing around the corner. This is especially the San Rafael one. That's amazing. So yeah. Great work.
It'll be great to get some infrastructure out there and give these companies a space to manufacture mm-hmm. the technologies that are coming out of that center.
Yeah. Thanks, Jenna.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Let's turn some time over to Ben to talk to us about the North Temple landfill project.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to say a huge thank you to our team, just in terms of all the work that they're involved with. I've always felt strongly about this throughout my career, is that I've always felt like I need to prove value for the communities that we're serving. And I absolutely believe that we're doing that. So as we look at the opportunity, whether it's streamlining logistics service in the Northwest Quadrant, bringing the right businesses in, helping to protect the environment, or working in Emory, Carbon County, or, you know, the great work that's being done in Juab, this really is working hand in glove with the local communities, making sure that we're in a good place to help provide real solutions. So, and I just give a huge shout out to our team, doing great work. We probably need two or three of them all over the place, but appreciate our community partners, Brent Boswell, Jen Wakeland, who are up here supporting as well. Appreciate the community support that we get, and just wanted to recognize them. So I'm now going to jump into the topic at hand, Resolution 2024-2022 that's going to be considered by our board today. So we have in prior meetings in June 2023 and also in November 2023 as well. We did a little bit more deep dive into the North Temple landfill project. Since those times, and more specifically since November, there have been a lot of things happening related to this site. As the public and certainly the board may be aware, our efforts last year were to purchase the landfill site, the North Temple landfill site, for its remediation. Over the last 12 months, we've continued to work with the current landowner, Trust Lands Administration, and also those other stakeholders that have an interest in this property and making sure that it gets remediated in the right ways. I just want to say a huge thank you to those partners, particularly the Trust Lands Administration. These things are never easy to work through. When you're working on a former landfill site where we're working on a remedial action plan, there's a lot of technicalities that go into this. These are not easy things to work through. So I just want to say a huge thank you to our partners, to our board. I know this has been an intense issue. We've had a lot of discussions and closed door meetings and other places related to this site. And so I just appreciate a lot of time and effort that has gone into this issue. This is not an issue that's just landing on our agenda today. It's been one that's had a lot of thought over the last 12 months. We now are getting to a point where we're ready to pivot towards what we hope will be the final leg of our due diligence journey. And I don't want to minimize today's step. It's a very important step. This will likely be the most important public step that the port will go through for the authorization for the purchase of the landfill site. Following today's board vote, it's not over, though. We still have things that staff will need to do. Though you're giving us specific guidance through this resolution, staff will be still working hard to make sure that contracts are done right, that environmental processes are adhered to, and that we have a really good game plan. Abby, Madam Chair, and I were just talking about this, ensuring that we have a really good game plan for what's going to take place with the development of that site. There are a lot of complications that go into purchasing a landfill site. And so I will go through what this resolution actually authorizes us to do for the public's awareness. We've reviewed this with the board a few different times in closed door meeting, but I'll go through a little bit of what has to happen for us to be able to close following this authorization today. So this resolution will actually authorize staff to go through the process up to a contract completion and including closing and purchasing on the landfill site. We have several parties that we will be negotiating with. One, we want to make sure that we're getting all of our documentation into the Utah Department of Environmental Quality. So we'll continue to work with their team and specifically those that are over remediation projects. We want to make sure that we're doing everything right. So we have a number of attorneys that are involved in this process, overseeing our efforts to make sure that all of the documentation that needs to be submitted for the proper transfer of property are done. So we're working through that property or process. We feel very comfortable in how that process is going. We appreciate our partners at Trust Lands and also with Utah DEQ again that are helping us through that process. We also have to take to the next step the contract between ourselves and the Trust Lands Administration. That, as the board is aware, means that we have to use our existing LOI, which the board has. We have to stay substantially compliant with that document and build out the ultimate purchase sell agreement. That purchase sell agreement ultimately will be what dictates the transfer of property. So getting that document right is very, very important. We're getting closer. We feel like we're making good progress. But that is an important step that we will still have to take. This resolution will authorize me to complete that document and sign it, execute it. We also have to work with Rio Tinto to make sure that the interest that they have in the property, and specifically areas of no build and restricted build, are honored. As we've been working through that process with them, they've asked for an amendment to the current restrictive covenant. It's an amendment that we discussed. It's a very very likely will be very similar to the one that we talked about last November in our board meeting, but it will allow for an amendment to the current restrictive covenants, which will allow for some changes that both parties feel are favorable. Last but not least, we are negotiating with Ninegrit, who would, in some form or capacity, we're working on that now, but would help facilitate the transfer of property, and also looking at what specifically the RAP phase one looks like, and making sure that we get it completed in a timely manner. So we're still working out what that agreement looks like with them as well. This authorization, again, resolution 2024-22, will authorize staff to complete the negotiations and finalize all of those documents, and then also move through the actual closing and purchase of this property. I hesitate to put a timeline on those things, so the timeline that I would give publicly is as soon as possible. That's what we're working towards. And again, when you're working with this many complexities, we appreciate all of the partners, the Attorney General's Office, Brooke McCarrick, who's been representing us in certain aspects, also Michelle Eben with Michael Best, who's representing us, and also all of the other attorneys that are representing different parties. This has been moving a mountain, literally, from one organization to another. And I again, we're not there yet. We still have some things that we need to work out, but we're at the point where we need authorization from the board to move this forward. At the time of completion, we will bring this back to the board to make the public aware that when the closing has taken place, just so that there's awareness here. And we will get more in depth on what our plans are and more granular. I'm not going to get into those steps right now because it's not appropriate. But I am going to get into the vision and just say our intent on this property. We've already been very publicly acknowledging we do not want distribution centers. We don't want warehouse. This is something and a site that is meant to differentiate the Salt Lake City economy from what would have happened but for the port's involvement. We want to see, as we talked about earlier, opportunities for biotech manufacturing. We want to see aerospace manufacturing. We want to see clean tech. There are a lot of opportunities out there in clean energy space right now. We want to see continued development around those types of opportunities. We want this site to be something special in the marketplace. The Inland Port Authority is uniquely qualified to make this happen. We were given particularly the financial resources from the legislature very early on to ensure that we could get this property taken care of. To get it done right, it's going to take a significant investment and it's going to take a lot of patience. We understand very clearly we could develop distribution centers on this site. It could turn into a cash cow. We could use that to fund the remediation. That's not what we're here to do. And we appreciate that there has to be an economic aspect to this, the development of this site. We have the ability to be patient and to get the right kind of industrial development onto this site. And that's absolutely our intent. So as we're looking through the next steps, I hesitate to go too much into, you know, what future phases of remedial action plans will look like, what partnerships will entail. Those are things that will have to be determined. Our sole focus right now is just getting everything done and ready for the completion of this site. But our commitment to the public going through this is that you're going to see something special develop on this site. We absolutely believe that it's possible to take something from a landfill state into something that will be a huge economic boom for the county and for the state of Utah. That's what we're committed to. That's our vision. We feel like we have the financial resources, and now we are asking the board for approval after public comment, for approval of this resolution, and ultimately that will allow the port to move forward to finalize negotiations and hopefully close on the property.
Jerry, I'm going to let you comment first because I know you have something to say here.
Actually, I don't, but I will find something very quickly. You know, this has been a very interesting process. We started through this. We've actually started through the interim report process in, I think, 2017. And we've developed interesting partners and interesting discussions along the way. But I must say that the board that we have and our director are amazing people to be able to put this together. It's been very difficult at times, and it's been, I think we've all caught the vision over the last two or three months over what this can be. And when I say we have all, that includes our partners. We recognize that there's some really important things that can be done in this area. And, you know, stacking up 50-year-old garbage should not be one of those things that should take place on that site. This is a gateway into the city, and it should be perceived as a gateway into the city. And a very proper manufacturing area that does things at very high tech. And again, sometimes if you get into these economic development initiatives, you look at them and you wonder, how can anyone take the time to make sure this goes right? And only government can do that. A private entity cannot take the time to make sure this works. But an entity that has ties to the private sector and deals in government does have the time. We can look 40 years out. Look at the industrial park or the tech park above the University of Utah. That's 45 years ago that was started, and it's just filled up. So these are the kind of things that we have to have the vision to move into as far as the state of Utah is concerned. And I'm very pleased and very proud to have been a part of this, moving this to the point that it's at. And I think that everyone up here should be very pleased with what's taking place and what is taking place in that area. And I think we'll all look back in maybe 40 years. I don't know how long it will take, but we will look back and we will be very pleased with what we've created. Thank you.
Thanks, Jerry. Victoria.
It's hard to believe that I already am at the end of my term next year, and I have to decide if I want to do this again. When I first got into office, this landfill was one of my first 10 days meeting. Like, I met Gary from Minigrit. That's how I know that he and I are from the same place in the Hudson Valley. We got the best Italian food from the same place. And it was a perennial conversation. And every time we talk, there would be grand plans. There would be an acknowledgement of how grave the responsibility was here and how each subsequent month it was getting graver. And I remember thinking, well, no wonder everyone hates government if we know things are getting worse with no strategy to make them better. And so I've watched this from both sides now, from being a board member on the port and from being a member of the city leadership, knowing that this is a little bit of a time bomb. There's issues that must be addressed. The aesthetic of coming into the city and not wanting to see it, the physical of it's 50-year-old garbage, and we need to make sure that we are staying safe from what could happen there. And so I have to say, I'm just really thankful for the careful consideration that's happened on both sides of the transaction to make sure that the constituencies of Utah will benefit from this transaction, because the environmental net is a positive progress that proactively contains known harms and is proactively ready to address whatever comes, that there are ready dollars identified to address them, and that there are decision makers who are understanding that they have to be flexible. It never occurred to me, and I do have to shout out and thank now Speaker Schultz, who, when I first got on this board, heard like some ambiguously ethnic girl from the West Side say, "I hate these stupid distribution centers. Not only are they pumping PM2.5 into my kids' lungs nonstop, they're offering my neighbors nothing but dead-end jobs. And I'm tired of shuffling kitsch made in another country. We're capable of more here." And now Speaker Schultz heard it. Ben, when you came in, you carried the banner and have never let it fall. And so now to know not only is this problem that I knew about within the first 10 days coming to a reasonable, resourced conclusion, but also that the future of the site isn't one that I have to equally fear, whether it's for the economic future or the environmental future of my neighbors, I want to say thank you. I know that it's far from ideal for a lot of people who might comment on it, but from my standpoint, my institutional trust is a little bit revived. There's a problem and we're going to participate in not just fixing it, but also using it and leveraging it for an improved future in many ways. So thank you.
Thanks, Victoria. Bill, it looks like you have a comment. No. Okay. Brian.
I'll just be brief. I disagree. I think we should keep the landfill. I think it smells good, looks good, and does wonders for our economy. Thank you. No, I think this is a great opportunity to celebrate Ben Hart's birthday. And happy birthday, Ben. And as we look at development, we often look at use of land. And I can't think of a possible worse use for land than a landfill. And so even if we were to do nothing on this property except for remediate it and then plant one stalk of corn and sell that one cob of corn for 25 cents, we will be 10 million times better off than where we are today. But then to think that we can do so much more on top of that is just amazing. As we think about the growth happening in Utah, future generations, job creation needs, this is a perfect opportunity. So I'm just grateful to be part of it and supportive of it. So thank you, Ben, to you and your team. Birthday boy.
Yeah, got a little donut cake from Victoria. So it's wonderful. Well, I'll just comment a couple things on number one. And I know they're listening here, but Warren Peterson is the chair of the Trust Lands Association and Michelle is the executive director. We just appreciate you continuing to stay at the table with us. It was not easy all the way through and we're still certainly not done, but we do see a partnership there that has grown and we appreciate them continuing to stay active in this. We have a very aggressive timeline on remediation, and we'll talk about all that when the deal is done and when we can come back at the first of the year to unveil the plan there for remediation. But we're going to be very aggressive in getting that cleaned up. We're going to be very aggressive in moving fast forward through the entire process. That was not always the plan. Just kind of build it and then save and then continue to remediate and save. And we don't have to do that as an agency. So super big day for the Inland Port. And we can't say we're not landowners anymore because we own some land now. So Ben, great work and your team, great work. We'll celebrate this when the ink is sealed, but really, really tremendous amount of work.
Madam Chair, I thank you to the board. I did fail. I kind of did, but I do want to specifically reference Joel, Abby, and Jerry have spent countless hours over the last 12 months. Again, we're not done, so it's not a victory lap. But the amount of time they have spent on this, in addition to everything else they have going on, has been phenomenal. They've been ready whenever we needed something turned quick. This would not have happened but for an incredibly supportive board. So thank you to them. This has been a lot of time and effort.
All right. Well, with that, let's move on to some public comment. We're a little behind where we said we were going to, so we'll rattle through these. I'm going to name a few of you if you'll come up to the podium and then just be ready to go. Joan Gregory, Scott Williams, and Katie Pappas. If you'll just get in that order, then we'll turn all the mics on and you can head out. Time is yours, Joan.
Is that okay? I hear it. My name is Joan Gregory and I live in Salt Lake City. I'm speaking today to deliver to the board a petition to save Great Salt Lake wetlands signed by 1,000 concerned community members and also the 2024 wetlands report compiled by the Stop the Polluting Port Coalition. We call for a halt to state-subsidized industrial development in and adjacent to Great Salt Lake's wetlands. The threat posed by UIPA forcing taxpayers to subsidize development of wetlands has grown over the last year as UIPA has increased the size of project areas in the Great Salt Lake Basin. Over 77,000 acres are now facing damage or destruction because of state-incentivized industrial development. Paving over Great Salt Lake wetlands is the worst possible way for Utah to grow. Wetlands provide essential wildlife habitat and irreplaceable services, absorbing air pollution, flood control, and protecting water quality. The hydrology of these wetlands and Great Salt Lake is intertwined. We cannot save Great Salt Lake and simultaneously amputate its wetlands. State-subsidized development in Great Salt Lake Basin will deplete and pollute water resources in areas like Tooele County, which already faces dire water shortages, resulting in a significant diversion of water resources away from Great Salt Lake. Preserving quality of life on the Wasatch Front will require saving Great Salt Lake. And saving Great Salt Lake requires saving its wetlands. Taxpayer dollars should not be subsidizing corporations to create this massive public harm. I'll deliver the report and the petition to Larry.
Thanks, Joan. Scott, time is yours.
Thank you. My name is Scott Williams. I represent an organization called Utah Drag Racing Coalition, www.udrc.us. 2,300 people here in Utah have signed on our petition to hopefully bring a drag racing facility back to the Utah or Salt Lake area, which would benefit tens of thousands of Utahns. I come to you today to basically hopefully expand the vision. I understand that, you know, I've spent some time talking with Gary at Integrate, Department of Environmental Quality, Salt Lake City, planning and development, and there are plans that you all have in mind. And what we are asking for an opportunity is to hopefully buy 120 acres of the North Strip to put a strip in, and the economic benefits could be absolutely huge here. We have two large companies that are interested in having a facility where they can test, where they have to go to Las Vegas in order to test a lot of their technologies. I think this is a higher purpose. We have a big time problem with drag racing on the streets in Utah since RMR closed in 2019. So there's an opportunity to save lives here, improve the quality of life. And like I said, the economic and growth impact here is really, it's a pebble in the puddle scenario. The ripple effect could be huge. We talk about building a ski resort and the development that happens around it. A destination, a safe facility, drag racing facility, a test facility, would be absolutely huge. The economic impacts are just unlimited as far as we see it. Now, we talk about the environmental impacts, kind of a little bit versed in a remediation plan for the property. I think that we're in a good position to go ahead and do a type of facility that we're talking about, and the cost for the remediation compliance is going to be reasonable. So, as Joan mentioned, she has a petition. We are about to bring our petition to the legislature, asking for some public and private partnership.
Thanks, Scott.
Your help would be much appreciated. Thank you.
Appreciate it. I did not see drag racing coming to our agenda today, so you caught me a little off guard. But thank you. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
No, not at all. It's just... James after Katie and then Brian, if you'll come to the podium. But Katie, time is yours.
My name is Katie Pappas and I live in Salt Lake City. The Utah Inland Port Authority Castle Country Project Area amended plan adds over 9,500 acres to the Green River port area alone. Looking at your map, the size of this port seems to overwhelm this small town. The project area boundaries now extend from Highway 6 east to Long Street. Dozens of new parcels, many belonging to private residents, have been added. This isn't something we've seen before. Do they know that their land is now in a port area and that they can opt out? This expansion raises a lot of concerns. What kinds of development do you anticipate for this additional area? What do you consider appropriate development on parcels that are located in town? How will Green River be able to provide the workers and worker housing for construction and industries that build here? The larger the area, the more tax revenue that will be diverted from local services to UEPA for at least the next 25 years. How should Green River compensate for those lost funds? I realize these community leaders approach UEPA for help with economic development and jobs, and they are desperate. But you are supposed to be the experts. You know what the potential consequences and risks are. As enablers of these projects, you have a moral responsibility to make sure they understand possible outcomes, both good and bad. You shouldn't be putting communities in harm's way. Think about this. Would you want to live in a small town like Green River with only 881 people that is home to a uranium vanadium mill, a refinery, a transloading facility with its inherent increased traffic, and many other projects? Please don't impose this scale of development on Green River or any other Utah community. Thank you.
Thanks, Katie. James?
I'm interested in a statistical report card from the Inland Port after 7 years regarding, first of all, the amount of space that has been created and what percentage of that space is actually being occupied. That would be the first point. The second point is what companies have occupied these spaces and how big are they? That's the second point. And the third point is how many jobs have been created over these 7 years. Then finally, we take that amount and we do the number of jobs and find out how much has been spent by the state on the Inland Port, divide the jobs into the millions of dollars, and see what kind of ratio we might get out of that. I think that would be a very interesting statistic. Thank you.
Thank you, James. Brian?
Last week, 2.5 million people were smothered by one of our classic winter inversions. After 3 days, we had the worst air quality in the country, 16th worst in the world. Some Utahns died from the inversion, as they do almost every day from air pollution. There is no toe tag in the morgue that says air pollution did this, but air pollution increases the risk of heart attacks, strokes, fatal arrhythmias, heart failure, cancer, Alzheimer's, pneumonia, COVID, miscarriages, stillbirths, and SIDS that are listed as the cause on death certificates. This pollution is a huge economic burden. The worst air pollution in the country is not exactly keeping healthcare costs down, kids in school, or a terrific advertisement to lure companies or would-be employers to move here, or to maintain real estate values. Clean air would be a much stronger economic stimulus than UEPA warehouse farms. UEPA will make these inversions and everyday pollution worse in at least 5 ways. If these ports are successful, it would mean a massive increase in goods imported and exported from the state. More goods shipped mean more fossil fuel emissions, whether from tens of thousands of diesel trucks, trains, or airplanes. Inland ports elsewhere aren't nicknamed diesel death zones for no reason. Loss of wetlands means loss of their pollution absorption. Replacing them with acres of new asphalt means more VOCs, ozone, and particulate pollution just from the asphalt. More water consumption from UEPA development means a smaller Great Salt Lake, a larger solar reflective dried up lake bed, and more catalyzed formation of ozone. A smaller Great Salt Lake means more dust storms. We cannot save the Great Salt Lake while simultaneously amputating its wetlands. UEPA's creators proudly proclaimed they started building the plane while flying it. Now UEPA is building the plane while crash landing it on Utah's own residents. On behalf of concerned citizens throughout Utah, we call for a halt to subsidize industrial development in and adjacent to Wasatch Front wetlands. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it. All right, board members, let's go to the board policies that Amy presented earlier and discuss those. So the first one is BP08, which is the whistleblower policy. Amy indicated that there was not very many changes to this from the last iteration, and we discussed this last board meeting. I'm just looking for a motion on BP08, the whistleblower policy. I'm going to turn all you on, so you just can rapid fire this. Gentlemen, I need a motion on BP08.
I'll make a motion.
Thanks, Jeff.
Second.
Ryan, thank you for that. All those in favor of approving board policy BP08, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All those, okay, now let's move on to BP09, which is the internal control program. There were a few changes to this one that we discussed last time, but not hugely significant. Can I get a motion and a second on BP09, internal control programs?
I move that we approve BP09, internal control program.
Thanks, Ryan. Second. And Jerry, thank you for that second. All those in favor of approving BP09, please say yay.
Yay.
Aye. Whatever. Aye, yay. Either one. Any opposed? All right. Thank you. Passes unanimously, Larry. BP17 wetland policy, and there was some significant changes that Mona went through today. Looking for motion and a second on those, that policy.
I move to approve BP17. On the wetlands.
Thanks, Jonathan. Appreciate that. And a second?
I would second.
Thanks, Jerry. Appreciate that. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Yay.
Aye. Thank you. All right. Next one up is Resolution 24-19. That's appointing Ariane Gibson as our treasurer. That is in your packets as well. Larry, will you read that resolution for the record, please? There you go.
Thank you. Resolution 2024-19, a resolution of the Utah Inland Port Authority appointing Ariane Gibson as treasurer.
So moved.
Thank you, Jerry. Appreciate Second. That. And Ryan, thank you for that. All those in favor of that motion to adopt the resolution, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Larry, that passes unanimously. All right, Larry, we're going to keep coming to you on the Social Security section of 218 referendum, Resolution 23, if you can read that for the record.
Wish me luck with this one. Resolution 2024-23, a resolution of the Utah Inland Port Authority Board of the Utah Inland Port Authority to hold a section 218 referendum for the purpose of determining whether Utah Inland Port Authority will participate in the state's section 218 agreement and provide Social Security benefits to Utah Inland Port Authority employees.
Thanks, Larry. Do we have a motion on adopting that resolution?
I would move on that motion.
Thank you, Jerry. Second?
Second.
Thanks, Jonathan. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? We're saying them all. All right. The next one on the Mineral Mountain Projects 24-20 for the area plan. Larry, will you read that one as well, please?
Yes. Resolution 2024-20, a resolution of the Utah Inland Port Authority Board adopting amendments to the Mineral Mountains Inland Port Project Area Plan.
Thanks, Larry. All those in favor of that motion, excuse me, let me get a motion first.
So moved.
Thanks, Ryan. And a second?
Second.
Thanks, Jonathan. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No. Okay. All right. Rule that motion passes unanimously. Resolution, Larry, 24-21, the Central Utah Agri Park Project Area.
Yes, Resolution 2024-21, a resolution of the Utah Inland Port Authority Board adopting amendments to the Central Utah Agri Park Inland Port Project Area Plan.
Thanks, Larry. Do we have a motion on that resolution?
I would move that we adopt the expansion there.
Thanks, Jerry. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Thanks, Jonathan. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Well, that motion passes. Let's go to resolution 24, the big one. Drum roll, the purchase of the Northwest North Temple landfill property. Larry, will you read that motion?
Yes, resolution 2024-22, a resolution of the Utah Inland Port Authority Board approving the purchase of real property located at 6780 North Temple Frontage, Salt Lake City, Utah, and authorizing the execution and delivery of a purchase agreement and related documents and interest and instruments.
Jerry, can I get a motion on the purchase of that?
I would love to make that motion. I move the approval of the purchase of the North Temple landfill property.
Thanks, Lick. Jerry, second?
I'll second that and also mention that I heard randomly applause in the background when he was reading that motion. So, yeah, I'll second that.
Thanks, Ryan. All right, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Rule that motion passes. All right, people, well, with that, we are adjourned. It's non-negotiable, so do I have a motion to adjourn?
I'll make the motion.
Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it.
I got you.
We are adjourned.